Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And I want to see how you all are feeling about the child migrant crisis now taking place in Central America and the United States. We'll set this up by playing a few excerpts of what politicians are saying about the situation, because I've been very struck by the stark differences in the language being used to describe the situation. For example, Louie Gohmert, Republican congressman, urged Texas Governor Rick Perry to, quote, use whatever means necessary, like troops, ships of war, or taxes, to stop the invasion. He called it an invasion.
We have a resolution, hadn't been filed yet, but it says, whereas this provision in the Constitution therefore recognized the continued right of individual states to use force in self-defense if, quote, actually invaded, whereas an unprecedented organized mass invasion of the United States is occurring along our southern border, whereas before this invasion, Marine Corps General John Kelly, commander of the U.S. Southern Command, or Southcom, in testimony before committees in each House of Congress, the House Armed Services Committee in February, Senate Armed Services Committee in March, warned of the security threats to the United States from criminal networks and terrorist organizations penetrating the United States through our southern border. And since the invasion, he has warned that the situation poses, quote, an existential threat, unquote. This general that has been overseeing our military in our southern area says that the threat to our country, threat to our very existence, our continued existence is at risk with what's going on at the southern border.
An invasion and an existential threat. So this is like the Hamas rockets coming into Israel, these Central American kids, I guess. Louie Gohmert, Texas Republican congressman. So that's a little bit different in terms of the language being used from what, say, Democratic Senator Dick Durbin said in a hearing on Friday.
The United States of America issues a report card on human rights to the world, where we grade other nations as to their record on human rights. That's pretty bold of us, isn't it? To hold ourselves out in judgment of other nations. And one of the things we ask is how those nations treat refugees and children. We don't have a very long record when it comes to refugees in this country, primarily because of location. Haitians, Cubans, Vietnamese, Hmongs. We've had some, but certainly when you look at the state of the world, with 2.3 million refugees coming out of Syria and fewer than 200 coming to the United States, we are kind of on the periphery of this issue until now. Now we get to face it, our backyard, our border.
Senator Dick Durbin. So listeners, are you for the children coming from Central America being labeled as refugees or invaders? Have you heard two members of Congress talk in more starkly different terms about the same people? Or would you use another word yourself? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what do you think the U.S. responsibility is if the teens here really are fleeing unsafe conditions in their hometowns? 212-433-WNYC. Or do you also see an existential threat? Is this flood of some tens of thousands of mostly teenage males from Central America the moral equivalent of Iran getting a nuclear bomb? 212-433-9692. Here's one answer to the responsibility question. What is the U.S.'s responsibility? From Democratic Senator Tom Harkin in that same hearing last Friday.
Our folks focus ought to be simply on making sure these kids are first safe, that they're fed, that they're clothed, that they're sheltered, and that they get not only good health services, but mental health services, and under the law, that they have every meaningful, that's a key word, meaningful opportunity to apply for asylum.
First priorities for Harkin: safe, fed, clothed, sheltered, and then given that due process to apply for asylum. Meaningful opportunities, referring to due process under the law, to apply for asylum in each individual case and then maybe be sent back, but it depends on the individual. That's a little different from the language used by Republican Congressman Raul Labrador, and very different in terms of the due process and time to consider the cases. If Harkin emphasized a meaningful opportunity to apply for asylum, Labrador said,
"The thing this administration needs to do is immediately deport these families, these children. I know it sounds harsh. I know it sounds difficult. But they're creating a crisis at this time that is actually going to harm these children. So these children are going to come through the border. They're going to come from Central America. Many of them are being raped. Many of them are being harmed. This is an outrageous thing that is happening to these children. And we need to actually take a strong stance against what's happening and against these illegal cartels."
Congressman Raul Labrador on Meet the Press. And that's a pattern of language different from the Louis Gohmert pattern that I've noticed on the Ship Them Back side. The danger to the kids gets framed as being from the coyotes, the people being hired to bring them out of their countries and into the United States, rather than the primary danger being from the conditions in their countries that they say they are fleeing. So ship them back to their dangerous towns for their own protection. That piece of rhetoric, interesting. So listeners, where are you on this language from either side on the responsibility of the United States or anything else you want to say? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Henry in Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hello, Henry.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I will call these children, you know, a direct and exclusive backfire of our foreign policy. And a solution would be, you know, to help revert the disaster of the U.S. engineered coup in 2009. It wasn't only backed up; it was engineered by the U.S.
In Honduras.
In Honduras, I also would like to revert the free trade agreement, which is neither trade nor is free. And how about alleviate the corruption there, which is a U.S. cultivated tool for all of the above? Mind you, the coup was the first organized welcome party of the extreme right to the Obama administration. Secretary Clinton was there, you know, prior to the coup, which was our 50th year anniversary last June. Otto Reich and Dimitri Negroponte were there also before the coup. And just Dimitri Negroponte, you know, in the 80s, established a state of terror. They kill approximately a quarter million people in Honduras, my country, and Central America, and Salvador and Nicaragua.
So let me play you, and I understand what you're saying from, you know, your point of view. U.S. policy helped cause these horrible conditions, which are now causing the children to flee to the U.S., and therefore we have a responsibility because U.S. policy that supported the coup and these economic policies are driving this. I get that. So we have President Obama coming out and maybe in his way sort of agreeing with you the other day. Listen.
The American people are an incredibly compassionate people. And when we see a child in need, we want to care for him. But what I think we all agreed on is that the best thing that we can do is to make sure that the children are able to live in their own countries safely.
So that statement kind of ducks what to do with them in the United States. But the longer-term solution that he referred to there is make sure that they can live safely in their countries so they can go back and be safe. What do you think the U.S. and he, you know, the president might debate some of the history as you interpreted it a few minutes ago. But what do you think the U.S. should do now as a matter of policy if that's the goal that you and the president agree on?
Well, help dismantle, you know, all this corruption and the militarism in the area. What I just said before is not an opinion. That these are facts, you know. The drug violence, I mean, after the coup, you know, the United States put another military base in the north. And if you follow the example of Afghanistan, occupied more than a dozen years, more than a decade, Colombia, which is called the Israel of South America because of the military aid, and these two countries are respectively the major producing countries of opium and cocaine, respectively.
But of course, the United States government would argue that the reason for U.S. military aid to Colombia and Honduras is particularly to fight the drug cartels.
Well, we know. Listen, in the era of information, WikiLeaks, Snowden, all this stuff, we know all that's baloney. You know, wherever we increase our military presence, also the narco trafficking increasing with it a stella of death. You know, and we're trying to blame this on a rumor, on amnesty rumor, and gang violence. I mean, the facts are there. You know, what the United States have done from my country, using it as a military. A military base is horrible, and it's exclusive backfire of the foreign policy.
Henry,
only the free trade agreement. You know, if you put it in the equation, like I say, which is neither trade nor is free, is responsible for most of the migration to the war, including Mexico.
Henry, stay there for a second. Let me put you on with another call. We're going to add Scott in Queens here. On line 7, who has a question about the governments of the countries that are sending these children our way. Scott, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. And I want to say, I think for the first time, I completely agree with President Obama. But I feel like, why aren't we in public discourse, or I think Obama could maybe help out here by being in public discourse with the presidents of these countries, to get to the bottom of who's organizing sending all these children here and how can we help them? How can we help the countries? And I think your caller who's still on the line is really right. We're not getting to the bottom of what we're allowing in the drug trade and our participation in that. Although we say we're fighting it, we're certainly allowing a lot of it, and we are causing some problems. But we need to publicly get to the bottom of this rather than just talking, you know, yeah. And not getting to the bottom of why they're coming, who's sending them, and why aren't we in dialogue with the presidents of the countries who are responsible for their own children.
So, Henry, what do you think about that? Is the president of Honduras and the other countries not taking responsibility for this?
First of all, the previous two administrations, Honduras, the current and the previous one, are illegitimate. They came to power via a fraud. And remember when Micheletti, the dictator, was there, the de facto dictator was there, Ileana Ros Lehtinen and traveled over there to support him, you know. And it's calculated, and I can tell you, these are facts, it's not an opinion. It's calculated there are 6 military bases in Honduras. If you increase that much military presence, how come the crime just rises before Zelaya was ousted?
So you're saying the government is so bad that we can't even look to the government for a solution right now?
We have to dismantle them. We have installed those governments like that. You know, via corruption, I can go there, you know, as the U.S. government and you know, and put all these corporations, you know, exploit the resources, you know, with these free trade agreements. Free trade agreement means the following. You sell me the things that I want and buy all the things that I sell you. I mean, that's what it means, you know, and we put all these corporations and start exploiting the resources.
Right. So the free trade agreement having that impact as well. Henry, I'm going to leave your call there. Thank you so much for chiming in. And Scott, that's depressing to hear his take that the government is so corrupt, at least in Honduras, that they're not going to be the ones to solve this problem until that government is dismantled.
Well, I just think we have to force the issue and say you are responsible. Doesn't matter if you're corrupt or not. You solve your problems, or you know, you deal with your problems. We're not responsible for their problems. We're compassionate people, as President Obama said, but that doesn't make us responsible. They're responsible for their problems. So straighten up.
Thank you.
You know, grow up.
And Scott, thank you. Thank you for your call. Melissa in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I moved to Manhattan in the 80s from El Paso, Texas, which is a sister city to Juarez, Mexico. And as people may have heard, that, you know, that's right on the border. It has changed tremendously over the past 20, 30 years. Back then, we used to be able to walk across the bridge and go to the nightclub, but now we fear for our lives if we did that. I believe, now this might sound like a conspiratory theory, but the cartels are using the children as shields, or what you would say as decoys, because there's only so many Border Patrol agents, and the children run directly up to them, and then that leaves routes open for the cartel to come through.
So if we accept that most of the children are actually fleeing their Central American countries out of genuine fear of violence that's increasing at home, and then they're subject to what you describe, you know, with respect to their dependence on the coyotes and therefore their vulnerability to the coyotes, what's the answer from the U.S. perspective? Is it to send them back by the plane load, as we're going to hear John McCain say in a minute, or is it...
No.
What would it be for you?
No, no. These are refugees. Look at our participation in Israel and Gaza, Syria. We have to think of this as this is right across our border. Juarez is a murder capital of North America. And if you think about that, why hasn't the U.S. done anything in regards to that? These children coming across, they could have been tied up in gangs and then forced to come across, you know, against their will. And
that's a new wrinkle, that some of the children are being brought here against their will. They don't even want to be coming to the United States.
Right. They're told, look, either you go or we're going to kill your family. You know, you got to think along the lines.
And the coyotes get what from that?
Oh, well, the coyotes are just a part of the whole process. You know, those are the people that just bring them across.
I don't mean the coyotes. I mean the drug cartels, I should have said. They get what from forcing migrants into the United States?
They get distraction from, they distract our U.S. Border Patrol agents. Now, I've seen them. You know, they're just a mile from my mother's house. You know, and then the Border Patrol agents, if they're busy with children, that's going to leave open routes or tunnels or this and that.
For the drugs and the guns.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that one before.
Why doesn't the U.S. look at that? Because that is a major crime. Now, the drug cartel, you know, marijuana, because of its what's happening here, legality and all the things that are happening, they're starting to push harder drugs, heroin, cocaine. And the cocaine is coming from Southern America.
Melissa, thank you very much for a fascinating but disturbing call. Maybe that's something that the mainstream journalism organizations need to look into in a deeper way. How much of this is distraction by design from the drug cartels along the U.S.-Mexico border on the Mexico side? Here's that John McCain clip talking about shipping them back by the plane load and fast.
There has to be a halt to this. That's what we want. And the best way to do that is for plane loads of these young people to be returning to the country of origin and their families who have spent as much as a year's salary paying these coyotes who are also in the business of $85 billion a year drug business will not be able to get their money and send their kids north. As soon as they see their money is not effective in getting their kids to this country, then it will stop, and not before. And as tragic and as terrible as this situation is, we cannot have an unending flow of children from all over the world, much less Central America, into our country.
So he's talking about the children being exploited by the coyotes and the cartels, but then there's the bottom line at the end of it, that the United States is being overrun by this flood of children coming in from these different countries. Well, here's the opposite take from Senator Harkin from his impassioned plea last Friday, wondering about the complaints that people make that the U.S. is being overrun by these Central American kids.
We can't turn our back on these kids. We can't hold ourselves up, as Senator Durbin said, as some paradigm of human rights protections in the United States, and then say round them up and ship them back. Should they say that to the Syrians that are escaping? Or other refugees around the world, round them up and ship them back? We're better than that. I have to disagree with my friend from South Carolina. We are not being overrun by these kids. We're a country of 300 million people. We're talking about, 50,000, 60,000, 90,000 at the most. That's overrunning America? Nonsense. We can deal with this.
Democratic Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. 90,000 children max into a country of 300 million people. What's the danger here of treating them as asylum applicants in a deliberate manner? Asks Tom Harkin. Susan in Caldwell, you're on WNYC. Hello, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to come from a perspective. I'm an immigration attorney. I have friends in the nonprofit world, and I 125% agree with Representative Durbin and I think Tom Harkin, who you just had on. The problem, though, with the asylum cases is legally, I don't know if it was on your show or Michelle Martin's show, was that the problem is that even though they can apply for asylum, they don't consider most courts and the asylum, there needs to be a connection to be in a part of usually a particular social group, and general crime is not considered a particular social group. So even if they could apply for asylum, a lot of times these kids don't get granted it. And what I told your screener as well is that children never want to leave where they grow up. So if you see kids, young kids, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, coming across the border, they not knowing the language, not having family here, they're doing it because their family has been killed, they've been threatened to join gangs. This has been going on in Central America for years and years.
But then, Susan, as an immigration attorney, let me ask you, what do they have to prove? And let me take an example. I was reading about San Pedro Sula in Honduras, which is said to now have the world's highest murder rate and has sent the most children to the United States of any place in the current wave, about 2,000 of the kids. So if a child just says, look, I'm from San Pedro Sula, it's just not safe there, does that get them asylum?
No. It has to be persecuted. And you have to be persecuted based on one of five things. For example, usually it's in these situations, like based on a political opinion, and they call it an immutable characteristic, something that can't be changed, member of a particular social group. I've seen colleagues of mine try and put these individuals fleeing from gangs into a particular social group of individuals who young people trying to be recruited by gangs. But I have yet to see in my personal career that be granted. And then they have to be able, they turn to the police and the government can't protect them.
But let me play you a clip then and get your reaction. Clip of the U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson testifying on Capitol Hill, his message to the people of Central America.
our border is not open to illegal migration. And our message to those who are coming here illegally, to those who are contemplating coming here illegally into South Texas, is we will send you back.
We will send you back. He sounds more like the Republican congressman than the Democratic congressman, President Obama's national Homeland Security Secretary, speaking at the border, by the way. That was not in congressional testimony, as I mistakenly said. He was outside, and you can hear the wind there. That was from his visit to the border the other day. So, Susan, as an immigration attorney, when you hear that, do you get the sense from anyone in your practice or that of your colleagues that there is a misimpression down there because of President Obama's executive order, DREAM Act, or anything like that, that there is kind of a free pass for children who make it here?
But when they say we're going to send them back, knowing full well the situation down there and how violent it is and how prevalent the gangs are, and there's thousands of gangs, they know that that's a death sentence to those kids. You're sending them back to die 100%. And if they don't, and they're just going to keep trying to come back across the border. And I don't think it's the DREAM Act per se. I just think that they just don't know where to go because they can't go south because it's not much better back there.
Can't they go? Isn't it better in Brazil, in Argentina, in Chile?
I mean, inflation, I don't know. But I heard Brazil has pretty bad inflation. But I think maybe because...
Well, inflation, I mean...
They had the. I know there's a law for special immigrant juveniles, and that may be part of it. But I just think they're just at their wit's end, and they don't know what to do. And I just find it shocking that 6 years ago we were accepting Cubans and fleeing communism and their country, and there's all these special laws for them. But 6 years later, we're turning, and those were in Peter Pan. There we were accepting kids. No problem by the plane load, and now we're want to put them, throw them back on the plane and send them to die. And it makes me so angry and breaks my heart.
And so last thing, and then we're going to be out of time for the whole segment, and I thank everybody for your calls. When you have McCain saying send them back by the plane load and Gohmert saying, send in troops, consider them invaders, et cetera, and you have Harkin and Durbin pleading for due process for each case to be considered on its merits when they do apply for asylum. And again, as an immigration attorney, is that due process at least being offered, even if the cases aren't resolved in the way you want to see them in a lot of instances? Are you finding that kids in these positions are not being represented in their asylum cases, are being summarily dismissed and shipped back on planes into unsafe circumstances, or are they at least getting their hearings on an individual case-by-case basis?
They're getting their hearings, but the problem is that the caseload in Newark, New Jersey, the average judge has 700 cases on their docket at any given time. So, and they are assigned attorneys in certain cases as juveniles, but the problem is that case law needs to change that member of a particular social group has to be included. It needs to be expanded to include individuals fleeing from gang violence. And once that category is established, then they can be granted asylum. And until that happens, unfortunately, as bad as the violence is, they may eventually be shipped back. But
Susan, thank you very much for chiming in.
Welcome.
I appreciate
thank you.
It. And thanks again to all of you who called. And you heard the starkly different language in the clips that we aggregated from members of Congress.